Welcome to Mission Minded, the podcast where we explore outside-the-box thinking in carrying out the Great Commission. On this week's episode, we are joined by Mike Goddard of Partners for Paraguay. Now here's our host, Jim Tingler.
Hi, and welcome back to the iTech Podcast. This is Jim Tingler coming at you from the iTech Studios. Today's guest is Mike Goddard. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the time here at iTech.
Yeah, it's always good to have you. And so as a way to get started, why don't you tell people who you are and maybe a little bit of the work that you're involved in?
Sure. My name is Mike Goddard, and my wife, Trisha, and my three children, we live in the country of Paraguay in the city of Asunción, the capital. And we've been there for 15 years. And serving to equip, to empower, to help the church send out missionaries to unreached people groups. And a lot of what we do is focused on that.
Oh, man. So what would that look like, trying to send the church out to unreached people groups?
Well, it can be complex and it can be very simple. We've had all kinds of experiences, both positive and negative, in this in these 15 years that we've worked. Much has been through traditional structures, and we're experimenting with non-traditional approaches as well, and also a mixture of that. So our goal is to be able to fulfill the Great Commission, and often it takes on a creative look, a look that may attain the expectation of some individuals and not others. But the ultimate goal is to glorify God and to see people being a witness into the least reached people groups of the world. So I'd like to, throughout this podcast, give a few examples of what that looks like.
Yeah, awesome. Mm-hmm. So when we say unreached people group, what does that mean?
There are ethnic groups around the world that have little or no access to truth as God claims truth, God the Creator. And without having access, there's no opportunity to know Him, know their Creator. So consequently, worldviews are in place that that build on the assumption of where reality came from. And many of these ethnic groups have languages that are not spoken in other places, so they're limited toward their geographical boundaries, their ethnical boundaries, and linguistical. And so the idea is to provide access within their heart language, within the understanding that they have, to be able to know God, their Creator, and know what He's trying to get across to them, a message, specifically a message of Jesus Christ and the gospel, we call it.
Hmm. Yeah, praise the Lord. Yeah, the Paraguay, though, I mean, there's unreached people groups in Paraguay?
Paraguay has been, it's a Catholic country. So Christianity in general has been the dominant religion. Okay, so within the dominant culture of Paraguay, you have sub-ethnic groups, which are minority groups. They are First Nations. They were there long before the European immigrants. And they did not grow up Catholic or Christian, and had little access to the Bible and its contents. So there are unreached people groups within the country, and there are, but mostly in a, I would call it pockets of unreached people groups, because you'll have an ethnic group that has access to the Bible, but might not have full understanding of what the Bible's teaching. So our job is to bring in what we feel sound biblical teaching, starting in Genesis and working our way through the Bible to Revelations, bringing the full revelation of what Jesus is teaching. So we would be a part of the Evangelical Church of Paraguay within the country that's involved in this movement, and to bring this chronological teaching, the teaching, the revelation of God from Genesis onward to ethnic groups. So many ethnic groups have received Bible teachers, if you will, or missionaries or priests, or, you know, call it what you may, but may or may not have come to a clear or full understanding of the biblical revelation. So even though there might be people who have embraced Christianity, there needs to be a lot of clarifications. We call it foundational teaching through Genesis onward. That way these pockets of people group without an understanding of the gospel can come to a clear, more relational and more of a relationship with Jesus Christ and their creator, rather than religion and embracing a rule system of rules. Mm-hmm. So in Paraguay, you'll have multiple ethnic groups, with some with limited and some with full access to scriptures and sound gospel message.
So in Paraguay, and you say ethnic groups, would that be, you know, still First Nation or indigenous people?
Paraguay, like many countries, like the United States or other countries, is full of immigrants. So ethnicity is quite diverse. The dominant ethnic group are from European Spanish descent. And that ethnic group mixed with the local ethnic group called the Guarani. And so these two mixtures of ethnicity has brought forth the Paraguayan nationals, or the mestizo society, a mixed ethnicity. So in Paraguay, it's kind of unique, even among all the South American countries, where there's a high level of bilingualism. I would estimate around 90% of the country speak Guarani, and probably the same amount Spanish. Some are monolingual Guarani and some monolingual Spanish, but the majority of people speak both languages. And then within that dominant culture, you'll have sub ethnicities that are split into five different language groups. Wow. So we claim in Paraguay 19 First Nation ethnic groups.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And each would have a unique dialect?
That's right, a unique dialect, unique culture.
Wow.
Where they believe origins come from, where what will happen to them after death, all of the assumptions that happen in the middle. Everyone is distinct from each other. And some share greater similarities than others. Within the Guarani, for example, being such a large ethnic group and family linguistical group, which stretches into Brazil, Bolivia, and northern Argentina, and then all of Paraguay, you'll have, like I mentioned before, at least five subgroups, and each having their own culture. I'll just name a couple. Painta Uterá. In Brazil, they're called Kaiowá. Or you have Mbuga Guarani, which are spill into both Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil. Or you have Aba Guarani that are both in Paraguay and Brazil. So you have all these different sub-ethnic groups of the same linguistical family.
Wow. Yeah. So how many of those languages do you speak?
I speak Guarani.
Okay.
And I grew up speaking a language called Ache.
Okay.
And then Spanish.
Okay. So I don't know if I've heard those languages. Could you just share maybe some examples of common I don't know if you need to teach me anything, but if you could just share some examples.
Well, so you can just have a sampler in the Ache language. I'll just say how happy I am to be here. Chou urigatu, chou ekonare pende endape, pende tapu achupe begatu, chou bukapure urupurangi. And so I'm basically saying my name's Mike, or it's Urupurangi, my indigenous name. And it's great to be here in this huge house, this big house that we're in.
Awesome.
That was Ache.
Okay. And then the
Guarani.
Yes.
Guarani. Mba'etekopio, shesherera Miguel. Basically, again, greeting, this is who I am, my name's Mike, and I'm really excited to be here today, this morning, in your place.
Awesome. Thank you. It took a little bit to learn that, I bet, yeah.
So I grew up there.
Right,
I grew
right.
up in the country, so actually I never studied those two languages.
Okay, just conversation and relationships.
Yeah, as a child, when someone grows up in the environment, you hear it, and it becomes part of who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Paraguay, though, for the last 15 years, right?
With my family.
With your family. Yeah. But you're...
But I grew up there.
Yeah.
So my story goes back to, well, it goes back for generations, but the story that's interesting is where my grandparents decided to become cross-cultural missionaries. And that happened in the early 50s.
Wow.
So they trained here in the United States and then were sent out in 1955 is when they arrived in Paraguay.
So they were sent out of, was that with an organization or out of the church?
The organization today is called Ethnos 360.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and they served in Paraguay for about 42 years.
Wow.
And then they had seven children. And out of the seven children, five ended up going cross-culturally into other countries, again, returning overseas, thinking in an American framework. My dad and my uncle returned to Paraguay specifically. Okay. And my dad raised three children. They returned to Paraguay as missionaries with Ethnos 360 in 1966.
Wow.
And served for about 42, 43 years.
Wow.
So about in 2009, they returned to the U.S. to retire, getting at a place where they needed to take a little time off from the cultural stress of living overseas. But all three of their children, myself included, we live in Paraguay as cross-cultural ministers and missionaries, pastors.
And is that with Ethnos 360 as well?
Originally, yes.
Okay.
Myself and my sister, we transitioned into a different missions paradigm, exploring new and different ways, perhaps not new, but just different approaches to ministry.
Right.
So my brother continues to serve with Ethnos 360 in Paraguay. And then my sister, brother-in-law, and my family, we started two different organizations.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I mean, with so many generations and so many people involved in missions, can you think of some of the changes that have happened in your lifetime?
It's, to me, the biggest change, and this is key, is especially for an American audience and a Western audience, missions has been a one-way street. It's me and my church and my country and my organization fulfilling a strategy and evangelizing, discipling. It could be church planting, it could be community development, different projects, but it's a one-way street. And we measure our success by how the locals respond. Okay, so we feel good about ourselves when they respond the way that I expect them to. Mm. So as the transition I've seen in missions is that the local people that have indeed embraced Christianity, the Bible, truth, they've accepted Christ as their Savior, have indeed grown in their knowledge of Scripture and in their ability to assume leadership of different roles. Mm. The thing that has come from that is a local contextualized church reality or vision and so now the missions the traditional paradigm what we call today is tradition of Western are going and accomplishing a mission has in many ways it's something past tense. It's already happened. Mm-hmm. Paraguay is one of those countries where we've seen 100 years of this happening. Mm-hmm. Now locals have been raised up. They have embraced, but the struggle right now is can Westerners accept this model that's emerging? Mm-hmm. Can we accept that as quality, as good? Or do we have to fix it if we think something's wrong? Mm. So anyway, the locals are taking leadership and ownership. So the biggest change I've seen in my lifetime in this accomplishment of the Great Commission is that it's no longer a one-way street, us to them. It has now transitioned to a togetherness. How can we together partner to see now the least reached people groups of the world with the access to this gospel? but the methods are changing drastically. The content remains the same, but the methods have changed.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to hear some of the methods, and that might play into the same question that I'm thinking, but I'm trying to think of from, you know, my local church, you know, and maybe churches across the United States, what role do we play in trying to support the work that you're talking about?
Excellent question, and I think it's the question we all will be wrestling with for quite a few years still. Mm-hmm. There is the pat answer, which is pray, give, go. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't change. We continue to pray. We engage. And how do you pray unless you have relationship? I can pray for all the missionaries of the world. God bless all the missionaries of the world. Mm-hmm. But it's very general. And I can pray more specifically when I have a relationship. Mm-hmm. So if I connect with an individual, say, in my context, Paraguay, I connect with them. And nowadays with social media, we can do that. Mm-hmm. We can do that through Facebook. We can do that. There's even Google Translate. No, it's not the ideal, right? But it can be done where we're connecting together. And I can pray now for someone who I know, who I know their personality. I can relate to some of their struggles. Mm-hmm. And it's reciprocal. They're seeing struggles I have because I'm just as weak or just as strong, or I'm going through some similar issues. Mm-hmm. So it's reciprocated, it's relational. So that aspect of praying and giving falls into that category. Giving and going, I think as it becomes more relational, more connected, it changes our perspective and the how-tos of every day. We still give, we still pray, we still go, but some of the hows are shifting. Now, it does involve intentionality. For a North American audience, it is expensive if you're always the one going. Again, it falls into our culture. We're a wealthy nation. For me to raise $2,000 for a short-term missions trip would probably be a lot faster and quicker and easier, rather than my indigenous brother who lives in a context where there's very little access to money. Mm-hmm. And to cash, very little cash flow. So for him to raise $2,000 to come to the U.S. might be a little more complex. All right, so the realities are much different. That's why you see so many missions trips overseas. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'd have more people coming here. But oftentimes you'll see some people meeting it somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. Hey, we'll cover 50%, you cover 50%, mm-hmm. and we'll meet in the middle. And that's working in many instances. But yeah, there's the practical aspect tends to have a very economical and practical connection.
Hmm. So you mentioned, you know, praying, building relationships, going. Would that be short-term trips? Is that what you're thinking? Going?
Short-term is many as one aspect. But, you know, when we talk about discipleship, mm-hmm. and making disciples, Jesus said, go into all the world, right? And in that, he talked about making disciples, helping people assimilate truth into their cultural context is our interpretation of that today. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen in a one-week span. Hmm. When I pursued relationship with with Trisha, who is now my wife today of 15 years, 16 years, I believe that date is correct. there was intentionality. It wasn't a short-term visit. It was a long time, long pursuit of time, and it continues. Mm. And we feel that it's until death do us part. That's the vow that we took at the altar. And I believe it's the same feeling with our commitment to Christ, our vow of being His disciples. It goes way beyond just a weekend visit. Now, just because we flirted for a weekend doesn't mean that was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. but it can't stay there. It has to be sustainable long term, and usually it means time. Mm. Time together. Mm-hmm. Many of my indigenous friends have, I've talked with them about what is it you guys are looking for? What are your expectations of me? And you know what? They don't give me the shopping list that one would expect. Now, I do have contacts of people I know that would be more than happy to pass me a shopping list of things that they need, right? Mm-hmm. But my friends, my indigenous friends, people I have a relationship with, they don't give me the 20 things that I need from you. They ask for one thing. Will you come and see me? Will you come and spend time with me? Hmm. I'm going through this issue. Can we talk on the phone, or can you come and visit me, or can I come visit you and stay in your home? And can we be together? So relationship is all about that. It's spending time, intentional time together. And in that context, discipleship happens. Iron sharpens iron. Not only does my friend grow in the Lord, but I do too from that. And so short-term missions, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But let's call it what it is. It's short-term. And it will be temporary unless it's set up in a way that it empowers, that there's relationship. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oftentimes we go in and see a problem and here's your solution. Mm-hmm. I think that's one big, you mentioned the relationship with your wife, and through counseling and over time, and I'm still learning this, but I have found that when my wife comes to me with a problem, she doesn't always want a solution. I know it's crazy, it doesn't make sense. It's like, if you would just do this, this is your answer. But I think that's part of a relationship, yeah. Just walking through, because there's not always an easy answer. And sometimes it's just working through it together.
Mm-hmm. Let me build off of what you mentioned, that togetherness in a marriage is key to healthy discipleship. Mm-hmm. That the desire to solve problems is a guy thing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean there aren't women who solve problems. There are some very exceptional women in that area. But it's built into who we are as men to be able to fix something. And we tinker with mechanics and do everything we can to, and we approach problems that way too. Mm-hmm. In a male-driven missional program, you're gonna get problem fixers. If we can mix up and work together in interdependency, I believe the outcome is much better. When my wife and I are working in synchronization, the organizations that I lead, the people I work with, they don't feel as if they are the problem that Mike is trying to fix. Because my wife is next to me, helping me guide, you know, kind of help balance me out,
if you will,
some of my tendencies. Now, women have their tendencies too, and we help balance them out. But it's a togetherness thing. Just some of those things that we learn along the way.
Right. So you mentioned earlier that the message hasn't changed, but you've seen the tactics in recent years starting to change. What did you mean by that?
Okay, so methodology. I was trained in a cross-cultural missionary training center that maximized on methodology, and believe that the methodology is sound, and it is. It's a sound methodology. There's nothing wrong with that. However, what we have to do is look at principles. Why is a particular methodology good, and what principle is it based on? Because mm-hmm. it's the principles or truths that are immutable, they're mm-hmm. unchanging. Obviously, the only thing in existence that is unchanging is God and his character. Mm-hmm. So on principle-based ministry, you're going to have to stand on some truths that just never change. Mm-hmm. God's word never changes. Okay, so there's number one foundation. His word establishes all right, so we're going to have to build off of that. However, how is the word communicated? That does change from culture to culture. Mm-hmm. I use one example. Do we today in our pursuit of being like Jesus Christ, do we wear the clothing that Jesus wore of his time? Mm-hmm. The sandals, well, maybe some people wear sandals, but you rarely see a Westerner walking around in a robe in everyday life, because there's certain things that culture, thinking through some of these concepts, one of my friends, and I'll give an example of a very respected man in Paraguay, and I'll mention his name. He is Cipriano Ayala. And Cipriano, he's an Ava Guarani man. And he has been involved in evangelism and discipleship for many years, many, many years. And he worked for a good portion of those years under the guidance, the direct oversight of Westerners. Hmm. Okay, so Westerners with Western financing also determine how strategy is set into motion. Westerners, for example, have access to funds, tend to, not always, but tend to. One of the items that are real popular in Paraguay is a vehicle, you know, or a motorcycle. Transportation, that's a big deal. How do I get from this point to that point and over rough roads? So in a Western context, he who has the vehicle also tends to have the fuel to put it in there and the credit card or the finances to be able to take a trip. So Cipriano's ministry was set in motion by Western mechanics, mm-hmm. tools, paid by Westerners. So the Westerner tended to dominate also who went where, when, and why, and for how long. When the Westerner was done and wanted to go home, he decided when it was time to go home. He owns the vehicle, it's his. So Cipriano, over the years, has grown in his network of donors and supporters and partners in ministry. And through that time, he's realized, I can make decisions on the how I want to see evangelism taking place from my home church. So he's an Ava Guarani man who's a member of an Ache church. Mm-hmm. And he is partnered with this Ache church where he lives in the department where he lives. Paraguay is divided into departments instead mm-hmm. of states. And so his vision is to see all the villages within the department he lives in with access to the gospel and with local, I'd like to say local churches, but not in the traditional sense there has to be a building or a place of worship, but with believers, disciples in each of these villages. There's about 115 villages, so it's not a small task. Out of those, only maybe seven or eight have a what Westerner would call a functioning local church, you know, with a place of worship, a pastor, and parishioners or members that come every Sunday, etc. So as he's been going about this, he's developing a strategy based on the gifts that the Ache people have within his church. Well, that looks different. At first they said, well, how are we going to pay for the trip that it requires to get from our village to a village 100 kilometers away? And the with the missionary is really easy. he's got the vehicle. I just have to call him. We set up a time and place and we go. But once they're at the village, the locals say, when are you going to come visit me? Okay. And what Cipriano has always had to do is look over his shoulder at the guy who owns the vehicle and say, what do you think? You know, when can we come back? So that, in many ways, that's dependency. It's dependency. And now it works, but, and sometimes it's healthy and sometimes it's unhealthy dependency, but it's, nevertheless, it's dependency. And so what he's been able to do as his partners have increased is he's been able to say the locals that he's been visiting and evangelizing and sharing the gospel with, I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back and wait for me in 5 days, I'll return, okay? In that context, if he doesn't, he's called a liar. You lied to me, and that brings shame. So he does everything possible to return. Now the Ache, they've taken it on the challenge to plant. Right now they're involved in planting 12 to 15 churches in 12 different communities. And they're involved in visiting, and they tried to raise this funds themselves, mm-hmm. but they realized we're limited. We're not producing enough economy locally. We're not poor people, or no, they don't. We're not poor, but neither are we producing the funds necessary in order for us to cover all the expenses to evangelize and maintain all these visits. So we have met them in the middle and have found external donors who have partnered with them, and we do the negotiations, the channeling, the working with, and sorting through the details of how that plays out. But the locals are raising funds themselves from their own pockets, their own hard work, and then putting that in the offering plate and for a special fund to go out. But it's also matched with external funds, so that when he's going out with his team, and there's about four or five teams that go out mm-hmm. on a weekly or bi-weekly basis, they have the ability, the power, or the ability to say, I'll be back on such and such day, knowing that they have X amount of funds available for that week or that month. And it has changed his outlook on ministry. Now he says, okay, so I'm in charge here. I get to decide how we evangelize. And before, the missionary said, okay, we have 15 minutes, and then we have to go to this place, or we have 30 minutes, time conscious. But he's more relational, so he can say, all right, this time we're going to spend the night here, or we're going to spend two nights here, or three nights here, and we're going to go visit this village and this village, because each reservation, it could be several hectares or acres of land, have multiple villages within it. And so if, as a visitor, you can come and spend one night here and visit over here and over there. And one specific, I know my dialogue's getting a little long here, but one specific instance that I've noticed with Sipuri Amelin is outworking, is he has determined that in his culture, in the culture of the people that he's working with, to bring them together, the best way is to prepare food. Okay. All right. The first thing that comes to minds of a Western is, when I was in training, we heard that rice Christians are a bad thing. If you feed them, it'll create dependency. They'll come to Jesus just for the food. And in fact, Scripture talks about that. When Jesus fed the 4,000 and the 5,000, he noticed that there are some among them, that majority of them, that wanted the food and weren't there for spiritual reasons. So immediately our minds go to, okay, is this a good idea? But Cipriano say, no, what we're doing here is taking a cultural value that the Guarani people have. Years ago, they would go on a hunting trip, and if they were fortunate to get a tapir or an animal, that'd be brought back. If there were problems within the unrest in the village or in the community, it would be a time of reconciliation when the whole village is kind of like our Thanksgiving dinner. Everyone, let's just pile on the food, let's just eat and enjoy it, and then afterwards, if there's any problems, I'm sorry, yes, hey, we're cool again. We have our own ways of reconciliation that aren't too different. So the men would bring out this food, the meat, and the women would prepare it, and reconciliation would take place. A strange husband with a wife, or even instances of death where this person murdered this other person's wife or brother, and reconciliation would take place in these contexts. And so it happens over usually the death of an animal. So you might start sensing some correlations here. The death of Christ bringing reconciliation among people, and the shedding of blood. Well, there's some elements in there. So what he does is he brings people together on occasion, not every time he travels, but on occasion, bring people together for a time of reconciliation and then a time of reconciling people to Christ. Mm-hmm. Here's what our Creator says. Here's what God did for us to be reconciled to Him. He sent His Son, Jesus Christ. So many, many people are coming to know the Lord through, and the Guarani word for this is Karuwasu, or the feast. These feasts, time of feast. And so as a Westerner, we may say, oh, why are you feeding all these people? But in his context, no, this is a culturally appropriate value, core value, that is bringing reconciliation. Many have come to know Christ. Shamans, people who are struggling with alcoholism, people who have murdered, their murders, and people who have raped other people, others, they come to this because it's not an environment that is extremely religious and foreign, but it's something that's their own. And during that time, truth is explained. So methodologies are changing and shifting, maybe not 100%, but they're beginning to shift as the indigenous takes leadership in accordance to the biblical principles.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, we come in as Westerners, you know, just as an example you mentioned with, you know, the transportation. Well, we have a schedule and we've planned things out weeks in advance. So when there's an invitation, it doesn't really fit into the schedule till next month. And not only that, we have to get back. So, hey, we only have, like you said, I think 15 minutes left here. When I've traveled, that's not even a concept in the time management. But then also, just providing the food, but in a way that's culturally relevant. Mm-hmm. I can think of times where maybe I've been involved where we're going to want to put on a festival or something, and there's ways or complications that, you know, as you mentioned, we're taught this doesn't work. And I think it's time for us to just work closer with nationals and help them in a way that, like, I also liked how you mentioned they matched the costs for, you know, the transportation. They still took half ownership, and at the same time working with them, supporting their ideas, but not just totally paying for everything. So it sounds like there's ways to get to that point, but that it might be complicated as far as it's not going to be a 5-minute phone call, or all of this might not just be answered in a short-term trip.
Yes. So, one of the things that we've seen as key is to play this intermediate role, this intermediary role between a donor, whether they're in the U.S. or Europe or even a Paraguayan or Latin national, wherever the money comes from, for that matter, and the partner that is involved in the day-to-day. Mm. It could be evangelism, it could be a community development project, whatever it is. To have this intermediary role that is working with both parties. Mm. Because the gap between the North American Western businessman mindset is goals. We, you know, let's see some results, let's see some goals in a relatively short amount of time. So it's complicated, and it's a tough job sometimes, but part of what I do, what we do in ministry, is to help disciple the donor in how to give and how to have proper expectations, and how to focus on relationship rather than results, but not to throw results out the window. And then to work on the flip side of it, to develop a sense of partnership that go internationally, That, for example, accountability is huge. How is that money spent? You know, let's just say a donor gives $100 and my indigenous brother is spending that $100 in ministry. Okay. How did you spend that? Okay. It's a fine line between being a control freak, and discipling them in being accountable. In indigenous culture, that type of accountability of receipts and everything is not normal. That's not a normal cultural practice in a non-paper society, an oral society. And so to have to write everything down, it doesn't come naturally. It's a learned skill. Well, that's where the intermediary comes in. This guy over here, the donor of $100, says, I just want to see the receipts, give me the receipts, and then I want to see the results. I don't care how it happens, just make it happen.
Right.
We're in the middle trying to disciple him and her, and we're trying to disciple the person in ministry to be more sensitive and to find mechanisms of accountability that are congruent with international ethical practices. So yeah. That's the role that we've been involved in, and it's complex, and it's not all wonderful stories there, but we do believe that it's discipleship. Every opportunity is, or every circumstance is an opportunity for discipleship.
That's awesome. So how would somebody get in contact with you if they wanted to learn more about,
sure,
you know, the work you're doing, or maybe they have questions based on maybe something they've heard today?
Sure. The organization I'm a part of here that we founded is called Partners for Paraguay. And so we have a website, and that would be the number 4 and then paraguay.org. So that's one way, and the information's there. And for a Latin American context that's Spanish speaking, we have another organization in Paraguay that we're leading is called Ñanduti. And that has a website.
You're gonna have to spell that one.
It can be posted in
sure,
some links on a social media, but it is nanduti.org.py, and that's where information can be followed up on. And of course, we're on social media as well in a personal way.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, and we'll be sure to put those links down in the show notes. So, hey, thank you so much. We better wrap things up here, Mike. I know we're a little short on time as far as the amount of stories I know you could share and the amount of time we're trying to fit this into. But I would encourage anybody that's listening to follow up with Mike and the work that he's doing. And thank you again for joining us. This is another iTech podcast, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Mission Minded. For more information on today's topic and show notes, please visit our website, itechusa.org.